Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, January 29th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A war of words has erupted between Higher Education Minister Jonathan Moyo and Presidential Spokesman George Charamba.
We are not speaking on behalf of the party. I don't think we are speaking on behalf of me either. So, wherever they said, whatever they said, I think they are the right people really to explain themselves.
Zimbabweans express mixed views over President Mugabe's one-year term as African Union chairperson.
It was a big strain on the economy. Remember, he was allocated 17 million and he spent a good 33 million by September last year. It's fair to say it's spent about 50 million towards the end of the year. So it was a big strain on the economy.
And Zimbabweans bid farewell to the late motor action boss, Eric Rosen.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
A war of words has erupted between Higher Education Minister Jonathan Moyo and Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Information and Presidential Spokesman George Charamba. The two openly traded barbs yesterday, with Charamba firing the first slavo while speaking on ZFM radio, saying without mentioning Moyo by name that, quote, "One tragedy of those little fellas, and I call them little fellas, they confuse media skills with social skills." He further attacked the so-called little fellas, stressing that one of them thinks he or she can scale up the political ladder by tweeting or manipulating news headlines for what he said were stupid ambitions. Moyo hit back on Twitter saying, quote, "George Charamba must not abuse his civil servant role as information permanent secretary to serve a successionist that will be reinstated as it was in 2014. Attempts to get a comment from the two were futile. Speaking exclusively to Studio 7's Blessing Zulu, ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kaya Moyo said the war of words is a personal war, not representative of the party. Moyo said he would rather comment on the party's economic blueprint, Zimasset, than the escalating war in the ruling party as the battle to succeed President Robert Mugabe intensifies.
They were not speaking on behalf of the party. I don't think they were speaking on behalf of me either. So, wherever they said, whatever they said, I think they are the right people really to explain themselves.
But I think what they were talking about is referring to the party and not themselves as individuals, right? The alleged factionalism.
They were referring to what?
The alleged factionalism in the party.
They were talking to who? I've not even seen this. Statement, whatever. Was it a statement?
Mr. Charamba was on ZFM and as usual, Professor Moyo was on Twitter.
Please, I'm very comfortable if you really spoke to each one of them.
So you are not going to comment as a party?
Well, we've not met it over such matters as a party. So I cannot speak or comment as a party because our process, Blessing, is that we as a party have got processes and have got procedures. And a number of issues we discuss at the Politburo. And once we have discussed the Politburo, I issue a statement on the position of the party. And we have not yet met as a Politburo. And we would not meet specifically for this anyhow. We've got a lot of things to attend to in terms of Zimasset, for instance, in terms of the post-mortem of the last National People's Conference, in terms of the resolution which we passed at the conference, which is still has to be presented to the Politburo. Those are the matters which concern us. But if there are individual opinions on whom or on which one, surely we cannot call a Politburo for that. But if anybody raises it, surely we shall discuss it.
That was ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kaya Moyo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Blessing Zulu also reached Zimbabwe Independent editor Dumisani Muleya, who says the alleged clash between Moyo and Charamba shows a deepening crisis in the ruling party.
If you look deep into the remarks that Charamba made, they clearly show that this is an attempt to fight back. How do we know this is a fight back? We do know because it filtered throughout the whole interview that he is on the Mnangagwa side. That's one. Number two, it filters through that he's trying to reverse the tide that Mnangagwa is currently facing, which is a trigger, which has been triggered by the G40. He is also trying to occupy the space, the strategic space around the Mugabe and the Grace Mugabe by claiming that there are people who are trying to remove them using their name. So what we are seeing is a fight by these two factions for the heart and the soul, not of the party, not of the government per se, but the heart and the soul of Mugabe and his wife as individuals and as institutionalized leaders. We are also seeing an attempt to occupy that ground and claim that George Charamba and those he represents in the Mnangagwa faction want Mugabe to stand for re-election in 2018. This is the same message G40 has been hammering through. So they are trying to seize that initiative and ground and make it theirs.
But how is Mr. Mugabe going to handle this? Obviously, this is very toxic for the party.
It is very divisive. What is clear now is that the center is not holding. Mugabe is no longer able to really hold the party together. Things are crumbling around him. Things are falling apart. And as a result, you now see a Hobbesian state of nature around Mugabe. Everyone against everyone. With some kind of political brutality that is being meted randomly but directed against the people across factions.
That was Zimbabwe Independent editor Dumbisani Muleya speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Mr. Mugabe turns 92 next month, and though the party endorsed him as its presidential candidate for 2018, factionalism, which insiders say is linked to his age, has reached a boiling point. There are allegedly two factions in ZANU-PF, one led by Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa and the other called Generation 40, backing the First Lady Grace Mugabe.
Labour Court Judge Justice Godfrey Musariri today dismissed a case in which the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe was challenging a move by the government to recall teachers who were on leave. Justice Musariri said the case was not fit for a group action, meaning that the PTUZ availed itself instead of individual teachers affected by the move. The judge also ruled that the matter did not qualify to be heard as an urgent case. This coincides with an announcement by Labour Minister Priska Mfumira that no teachers should go on leave until the government finds money to pay relief teachers. PTUZ General Secretary Raymond Majongwe says even though they are disappointed by the outcome of the case, their lawyers will file a new set of papers containing the names of the affected teachers on Monday next week.
Apparently, after getting very unfavorable responses from the judges, it became quite clear that they were not happy with the position where the PTUZ was on the papers, because they made it very clear that this can never be a group action. But we made it very clear that the PTUZ was on the papers because we are a registered bona fide trade union, and all we are doing is we are representing those workers who might want to remain anonymous, yet they subscribe to the notion that their rights must not be trampled upon. So on that technicality, and another one where the judges were also saying there was no need for us to make reference to a non-existent office, which is called the Secretary of the Public Service Commission. When in actual fact, a letter that we received from the same government on the 25th of January was making reference to the existence of that office, because we felt it was going to be a real challenge to make reference to the Secretary of the Civil Service Commission.
So what are you going to do next?
We are simply saying yes or no, we are submitting a new set of papers because justice has to be fought for. And fighting for justice is painful. We are ready to endure the pain. And we are also saying we are also going to approach many other international agencies. We are going to be approaching the ILO. We are going to be approaching the Education International simply to put pressure on government.
That was PTUZ General Secretary Raymond Majongwe speaking with us from Harare.
As promised yesterday in the second edition of a two-part report on Zimbabwe-Equatorial Guinea relations, today we're focusing on possible beneficiaries of the deepening relations between the two nations. Is Zimbabwe getting anything from the friendly relations? VOA's Blessing Zulu has more details.
In January 2014, President Nguema asked Mr. Mugabe for a security team comprising of police officers and soldiers to help counter terrorism when Equatorial Guinea hosted the Africa Cup of Nations. The team provided VIP security, intelligence, and helped to man key institutions. Recently, the Zimbabwe Defense Forces deployed a team of trainers to Equatorial Guinea to drill the country's military officers on court, operational and logistic matters, close court. This is according to the state-controlled Herald newspaper. The report said the delegation was composed of members of the Zimbabwe National Army and Air Force of Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe Defense Forces Commander General Constantine Chiwenga was quoted during a send-off ceremony last week as saying Equatorial Guinea requested assistance from Zimbabwe after realizing some training deficiencies in their defense forces. Military expert Dr. Lieutenant Colonel retired Martin Rupia says the development is helping both countries.
So we can look at minor material benefits, exchange programs, etc., you know, which has now taken place. Capacity building, etc., because Zimbabwe certainly has more capacity than Guinea. But I think bottom line, Guinea remains very grateful for the regime there in that it was not forced out of power by the military contingents, the mercenaries that had departed from South Africa at the time. So if you take that as a measure, I think it's obvious that Guinea is really, you know, forever grateful.
Western nations and human rights organizations have also criticized the two leaders for gross human rights abuses. Human Rights Watch researcher Dewama Vinga says the two are known for oppressing their people.
Mr. Basoka and Mr. Mugabe have got quite a lot in common in terms of massive corruption in their countries, bad governance, serious human rights abuses, as well as endemic nepotism and patronage and clientelism. So it appears that Mugabe so much wants to emulate and to walk in the footsteps of Basoko.
But Mr. Nguema, Africa's longest-serving head of state, has enjoyed what critics describe as an image makeover since enlisting the help of powerful Washington, D.C. lobbyists. Mr. Mugabe has attempted this public relations campaign, though it failed. A Chicago man working with Harare was sentenced to 15 months in prison last year for illegally lobbying on behalf of the Zimbabwean leader and others to try and press for the lifting of economic sanctions imposed on the president and his inner circle. Alicante Tutu, executive director of Justice for Equatorial Guinea, says the relationship has only benefited the two leaders, not the people they lead. But ZANU-PF United Kingdom branch chairman Nick Mangwana argues that the two countries are benefiting from this great friendship.
It's always good to have friends. You can have 53 embassies in the world. Each one of them is beneficial. Trade is beneficial. Then the issue of the basic issue of giving each other moral support is always important. One, Equatorial Guinea is an African country. A good relationship with any African country is a good thing. And then, obviously, the benefit, Zimbabwe needs oil, Equatorial Guinea needs support from Zimbabwe in kind. And there's always been that support between the two countries and trade between them as well. So, yeah, it's a mutually beneficial relationship.
Mangwana argues that President Mugabe and Mr. Nguema are being targeted because they are pan-Africanist.
I'm not particularly surprised, considering that the West has got a thing for countries in which whose resources they cannot get easy access to. So they have no control over Equatorial Guinea's oil resources. They have no control over Zimbabwe's natural resources as well. So, mineral resources. So you would expect such machinations from the West. History has shown that in 2004, Simon Mann and his mercenaries, mercenary comrades, tried to institute a coup in Equatorial Guinea. So that shows you already that there's always been an underhand to control Equatorial Guinea's resources. And the President Mugabe's position regarding Zimbabwe's natural resources and its natural heritage is always been consistent. It's well known, it's quite documented. So if you consider the two common factors between the two countries, then you would understand why the West is in such a position on both leaders.
Executive Director of the Washington-based Equatorial Guinea Justice, Tutu Alicante, begs to differ.
If we want to reduce Pan-Africanism to big, lavish meetings between the presidents, to endless visits between the two of them, perhaps, you know, that's a new definition of Pan-Africanism that should be included in the annals of Pan-Africanism, right?
Isolation, according to some political analysts, is what has drawn the two leaders together. But their spin doctors argue that it is their ideology that is resulting in these friendly nations being targeted by the West. Mr. Mugabe and President Nguema say Africa wants to see reforms enacted at the United Nations Security Council, and they are demanding that the continent should be given at least one spot as a permanent member. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu in Washington.
Coming up,
a closer look at Zimbabwe-Equatorial Guinea relations.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
The explosion of the mosquito-borne Zika virus in the Americas comes as tens of thousands of people are poised to descend on Brazil later this year for the Olympics, possibly making the International Games a springboard to transmit the virus around the world when visitors return home.
Authorities in Burundi have released two foreign journalists a day after they were arrested in the capital. VOA Central Africa Service reports that British photographer Phil Moore and the Africa chief for the French daily Le Monde, Jean-Philippe Remy, were released Friday.
And at least two people were killed and seven were injured when gunmen opened fire Friday on a Shiite mosque in eastern Saudi Arabia during weekly prayers. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. We're broadcasting on the 909 medium wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
As President Robert Mugabe's tenure as African Union chairperson comes to an end at the 26th AU summit being held in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, there are mixed views in the country about how he fared as the political head of the continental body, with government officials and his party supporters praising him for a job well done. His opponents claim that Zimbabwe did not benefit from his chairmanship. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
Most of the president's critics say President Mugabe performed badly as African Union chairperson, as he spent huge sums of money traveling to various countries, at times at the expense of Zimbabwean taxpayers. People's Democratic Party spokesperson Jacob Mafume claimed that Zimbabwe incurred huge financial losses as a result for his AU chairmanship.
The only thing we suffered are the costs of incessant travel from one conference to the other, and there's been a total lack of attention on domestic affairs. The economy has worsened, so the Zimbabweans have become worse from his visits.
He said the president should have used his AU chairmanship to open new trade opportunities for Zimbabweans and other Africans instead of always attacking the West for wrong reasons. There are some local people who believe that the president should have resolved most conflicts in Africa. Kuraone Chiwai, spokesperson of the MDC led by Professor Walsh Manule, said Mr. Mugabe failed to resolve political conflicts in Nigeria, Burundi, Mali and several others. At ZANU-PF Youth League, Tongai Kasukwere defended Mr. Mugabe, saying he had done so much in dealing with the crisis as some countries were not cooperating.
As you look at the situation in Burundi, the Burundian president is saying, no, we cannot have 60,000 days. The African Union has actually not been able to send anyone to speak. Burundi people are just watching the conflict.
His views were echoed by ZANU-PF legislator Kindness Baraza of Makonde, who said the president did well and scored many successes, such as the eradication of poverty.
He campaigned against terrorism. He campaigned to have peace in Lesotho, in Mali, in Somalia, and in Burundi. And for the first time during his time, the president also, through the AU, organized the first ever India-China summit. And that was followed again by another milestone, the China-Africa summit.
Great Zimbabwe University lecturer Joel Mukusha added that Mr. Mugabe has done well in tackling the issue of sustainability and self-reliance on the continent. He said, as a guru on the African continent, the president pushed for Africa to have permanent representation on the United Nations Security Council. But some critics, like political commentators Masimba Kuchera and Fortune Gwazi, said there was nothing an AU chairperson could do, as it was more of a ceremonial position. Kuchera said it was important for successive AU leaders to continue lobbying for a permanent seat on the UN Security Council.
It's been an ongoing issue from the time of the African Renaissance by Thabo Mbeki and these other comrades when he was in power. So clearly it takes some time. The world is warming up to the idea, but we can't attribute it to the current AU chair. What he's simply probably been able to do is to echo what previous chairs and previous leaders have already said.
Democracy activist Clarice Maduku said, while there might have been no tangible benefits to the country, Mr. Mugabe benefited in a big way, as the AU chairmanship legitimized his role in Zimbabwe.
He was sort of like facing some legitimacy. So it only helped the President Mugabe and ZANU-PF to continue chanting propaganda that he is an icon of Africa. But in terms of real material benefit in Zimbabwe, there was nothing that we really benefited.
Mr. Mugabe hands over the chairmanship to President Idris Deby of Chad at a time when the continent is plagued by several crises in various African countries. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Meanwhile, there are some Harare residents who say Mr. Mugabe championed the empowerment of women, fought for the implementation of the African continent's economic blueprint, Agenda 2063, and as usual was a thorn in the flesh on Western nations, widely seen by most leaders of the continent as neo-colonialists seeking to overexploit African resources without empowering poverty-stricken people in various nations. Our correspondent Patricia Mdadigwa conducted a vox populi in Harare on President Mugabe's one-year term as AU chairperson and filed this report.
President Mugabe told the 70th session of the United Nations General Assembly last year that the African Union supported most of the organization's priorities, which were designed to empower billions of people in the world. Mr. Mugabe was happy that sustainable development goals set by the United Nations dovetailed into the development initiatives of the AU, which was under his chairmanship. He went on to attack the West for failing to pave the way for Africans to have permanent seats in the critical UN Security Council, dominated by developed nations. Some people back home paid attention to the president's calls, while others believed that he was back to his old ways, attacking the West for any African problems. 1 year after taking over as AU chairperson, some people strongly believe that President Mugabe's leadership was a complete waste of time and resources. Local resident Wisdom Mugagara says Mr. Mugabe was one of the most ineffective African Union chairperson as political and armed conflicts gripped the continent during his tenure of office.
I strongly believe that he's the worst AU champion ever in the history of the organization.
Mugagara adds that Zimbabwe suffered economically when Mr. Mugabe was the AU chairperson.
More than anything else.
The president traveled to various nations as the chairperson of the AU and Zimbabwean leader, with funds being derived from both the African Union and struggling Southern African nation. His AU and national travel budgets have not yet been made public, though indications are that he may have spent millions of dollars in allowances and related expenses. Kudakwashe Tsiga, Another Harare resident believes that this worsens Zimbabwe's economic problems, as some of the funds spent on foreign trips should have been channeled towards reviving the economy or feeding hungry people currently facing a serious drought, fueled by the El Nino weather phenomenon.
It was a big strain on the economy. Remember, he was allocated 17 million and he spent a good 33 million by September last year. It's fair to say it's spent about 50 million towards the end of the year. So it was a big strain on the economy vis-a-vis, if you look at the demands elsewhere in terms of bonuses for civil servants, in terms of salaries for civil servants.
President Mugabe laid down millions of people in Africa as he did not play an active role in quelling political and armed conflicts.
He didn't stand up for the crisis which occurred in Africa, nor was he active in terms of trying to quell the crisis. He didn't step forward. He was not very visible as people expected him to be.
But Harare resident Anna Kombora says Mr. Mugabe has proved he's a true African statesman.
I believe Mugabe left a mark during his tenure. There was instability in the soil, but elections were held, and a lot of diplomatic interventions are still going on in Lesotho. In Mozambique as well, the Renamo bandits made it possible to have a crisis, but that country is now stable and a lot of diplomatic interventions being made.
Despite being impressed by the role of Mr. Mugabe during his tenure, Kombora agrees that Zimbabwe did not accrue a lot of benefits from chairing the African Union.
Zimbabwe as a country, yeah, to a lesser extent, but Zimbabwe benefited.
There are some Zimbabweans that don't even understand the operations of the African Union and President Mugabe's role in the last 12 months. One of them is Tichona Sibanda, who does not have an idea of what Mr. Mugabe was doing at the AU. He also believes that leaders are elected to occupy the AU.
Yeah, listen.
Stay tuned for Studio 7's live talk at 8:30 p.m. Our host will be talking with listeners and experts about President Robert Mugabe's term as African Union chairperson.
And now to recap today's top stories.
A war of words has erupted between Higher Education Minister Jonathan Moyo and presidential spokesman George Charamba.
Zimbabweans express mixed views over President Mugabe's one-year term as African Union chairperson.
And Zimbabweans bid farewell to the late Motor Action boss Eric Rosen.
That's our broadcast this evening. Join us at 7 every evening for news in 3 languages and visit us on the internet at www.studio7news.com for more on our top stories. You can send us an email to studio7@voanews.com or text us at the following number 001-202-465-0318.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntungameli Nkomo. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye in Washington.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.